I'm here with FinQuest, where you can play and win from the comfort of your own home with hundreds of slot games and all of the table games you love with real cash prizes. Right now, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 for new users. It's all at SpinQuest.com. That's SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Becker on Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5, the game on this Friday. We love our conversations with our next guest, Wes Durham, the play-by-play voice for the Atlanta Falcons. He is the man when it comes to the ACC. He has been there, done it all. Wes, how the heck are you? How are you and the family doing during these quarantine times?
Darren, we're fine, thank you. It's good to be with you guys. Hope you guys are well, too.
Yep, we're doing things we've never done before. I think this is show 17, is that right? Show 17? Yeah, from all of us doing it from our home. So Willie and I, as you know, we've all been at this in a long time. We've never done anything like this. So,
right.
What was that week like? We've kind of gone back to that week, you know, when everything mm-hmm. started canceling and how the shows evolved from Monday to that Friday and how crazy and fluid that week was, because the SEC basketball tournament was in our town.
Right.
You're dealing with ACC. So what was that week like for you?
It was definitely unique. I don't know that anybody ever has any, you know, expectation of when something like that happens, how will it go down, right?
Yeah.
I think there's a big picture to it, and there's the, you know, ground level of what happened. The ground level of what happened for us in Greensboro at the ACC was it started off in a fairly normal fashion. You know, games were on Tuesday. Our daily show originated from Greensboro starting on Tuesday morning. I did a Tuesday night game. I was scheduled to do ESPN Radio on Thursday. Actually, I was doing ESPN Radio's coverage of the quarterfinals when the thing got canceled, which was also unique because I had just done a show on television that morning where Jay Billis had spent about 30 minutes with us, and then John Swofford came on at 8:30 your time. And I think time is really important during all mm-hmm. this too, because, I'll tell you why in a minute. At 9:30 Eastern time, John Swofford told us they were going to play, but they had one more call. And it turns out that call was at 10:05 Eastern time and featured the five Power Five commissioners who were all staging tournaments. And it was at that time that I think they started to realize that it was going to be in their best interest not to play. Because remember, everybody had made the decision they were going to play without crowd, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
And that had occurred, and I still believe that the marker for all of this is Rudy Gobert's test positive.
Yeah. They booed here. Booed here for the Vanderbilt-Arkansas game when they made the announcement at Bridgestone Arena. They booed that decision, and people started leaving.
Well, they booed it in Greensboro, too.
Wow.
Because Carolina was playing Syracuse at the time when they announced it. And, I think Rudy Gobert testing positive changed the dynamic for every student-athlete who was getting ready to go on the floor.
Sure.
And those that had already been on the floor. But the bigger picture to this, and so essentially what happened was, and I'll quickly get through this back end of it with you guys, is that the ACC on that call and all the other things that happened essentially fell in line with the SEC, the Big 12, the Pac-12, and the Big 10. And then, you know, Val Ackerman and the Big East started because they felt like they'd be okay to start, I guess. They didn't want to waste any more time. They didn't want to wait any longer. They didn't want to delay the game, is what I was told. And, you know, as a result, they played a half, and then that tournament ended. But the bigger picture in this, and then this is the important part because I think it also counts for what's going to happen when we do come back, is those five commissioners, the ones that control college football, are the ones that made the decision to stop postseason basketball. And I think that's important to remember because – those commissioners all have a constituency, if I can use that political term, of public and private institutions who are all going to do things within their state guidelines. And whether you're Greg Sankey in the SEC or John Swofford in the ACC, you've got to deal with the governors and the political structures and the governing structures of those particular states of which those institutions follow those guidelines. Does all that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so at the end, I think that's the way we're going to come back. in some sort of unified state, I hope. I think we're on the early path of that by the guidance of the health folks and the medical people and the experts in these communities that, that fall within these state borders as well.
Yeah, that was well said. I remember us having Tim Brando on shortly after that. He was calling the Big East game at Madison Square Garden, and how bizarre that was, knowing that everybody else had been shutting down. The SEC, the first game was supposed to be Alabama and Tennessee, and they had warmed up, and they had gone back to the locker rooms, but about an hour before
tip,
they shut down.
We had Clemson, Florida State on the floor.
Right, right. Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. I mean, it was crazy. They both came out, but there was never any doubt in my mind they weren't going to play.
Yeah.
I mean, it was almost like the players knew they weren't going to play. They were just killing time, if you will, by coming out and getting some shots up.
That's interesting. What do you make of, let's see, there's been a couple of comments by some ADs. Notre Dame's AD Jack Swarbrick saying, you know, we've got to play with our cheerleaders and our band and our fans got to be there. And then Louisville's AD yesterday saying, you know, I think we're going to be playing college football in front of our fans. What do you make of these football athletic directors making those comments at this point in the game?
Well, I think there's a couple things at play, and I would defer to Willie and you guys who follow it from the NHL perspective, or, you know, people that are involved in Major League Baseball or the NBA. Economically, there's a reason to play. Now, can we do it safely? Can we do it with some degree of assurance that it's going to be a healthy environment for everybody, players, spectators, you know, folks that are working there? You know, I'd like to think so, right? If that means that we wait, then we wait to play. But I think, you know, from an economic standpoint, let's be honest, guys, college football drives the bus on a lot of this in terms of the business. And much like I would say that, you know, it's important that baseball and the NBA probably play. It's probably important that the NFL play. Are they going to play on the schedule that they would like to play? I don't know that. I don't think any of us know. That's the thing, Darren and Willie and Chase, that concerns me is, a lot of people are saying things, and I don't think they know any more than any of us do.
Yeah.
I think they're saying it for maybe to you know, impart some optimism in otherwise what's a pretty tough time in our country and for a lot of people personally who may have been affected by this virus. But I think down the road there's a reason the NBA wants to play, and it's called postseason television money. There's a reason baseball wants to play. There's a reason, I mean, Willie, you can speak to this. There's a reason the NHL wants to play. I mean, it's financial, and it's important. And whether it's with or without people in the building or in the stadium, I don't know that yet. I think that when we do go back, it's going to be entirely different than the way we used to go. And I think it'll be a lot like, in some respects, the new way we traveled after 9/11 in some respects.
Yeah, I think what's where I'm at with this, and by the way, I just saw where Gene Smith said that he struggles with the idea of having college football games without fans. It's like, guys, everybody understands that. I didn't think
right.
in my lifetime I'd see the Las Vegas Strip closed. Okay, sure. I didn't think in my lifetime I wouldn't see an NCAA basketball tournament happen at all. I mean, I didn't think in my lifetime Disney properties would be shut down, okay? We are, we're not in normal times. Of course everybody wants to. So I don't understand why these, you know, how could these college football or the, I'm sorry, not college football, how could these ADs at these big institutions not understand that we're not in, of course you couldn't see that. None of us could see any of this. So why would you make those statements?
I'm kind of with you on that, Darren, to be honest. I think we're just better served saying, hey, look, we're doing everything we can to get back. And if I'm a college football fan of the SEC or the ACC or any of the Power Five, I have great faith in those five guys being able to – because, look, they created what we now enjoy as the bonanza of college football in this country. And I think that there's a lot to a lot of positivity out of that group. In the creation of the college football playoff, and I think they can put all the right people in the room and make a good coordinated and orchestrated decision to bring the sport back, too.
Talking to Wes Durham, voice of the Atlanta Falcons, also longtime announcer in the ACC, and once upon a time, the voice of the Vanderbilt Commodores. We're getting historic
Ooh.
And reflective
Ooh.
Here, Wes. We've gone down memory lane many times on these shows, as you can imagine.
How long has it been since you've had that introduction?
Once upon a time, I mean, sounds like Cinderella and a pumpkin are going to be involved in it. But he's exactly right. It was a land far away, as they say.
So what was it? West 94 was the last year?
No.
93, 94
well, the
season?
94, 95 was my last year.
There we
yeah.
go.
Started, there go. Started 94, 92 95. And finished in the spring of 95.
So, Wes, one of the things I think every play-by-play announcer has thought about during these times is perhaps at some point doing a game with no fans in the stands. And I've seen a lot of articles written about it. I've seen people comment about it. I've thought about it a lot. What are your thoughts if you're in that position?
Well, having almost done it at the ACC tournament, Willie, it was going to be different. I think it would be entirely different to do what you and I do in a football hockey perspective where we're up and away from the floor than it would be to do a basketball game where you're around the floor. Because, in all honesty, Dan Shulman and I were having this conversation at the ACC tournament. How loud can we be? I mean, seriously, how loud could we be? Because if a kid takes a 25-foot jump shot with, 20 on the shot clock and it's a bad shot, is he going to hear me say, boy, that's an awful shot. That's way too early in the shot clock. And is he going to look at me and think, well, what's that, what's the old white guy talking about over there? I don't know how that's going to be without fans in a football or in a football stadium or in an arena where the NHL, where you're up top, I don't know what that'll be like. It'll definitely be different. Knowing some of the people you work with professionally, the audio people, those folks would really have a challenge because you're going to have to create the environment of the sticks and the ice and the skates and the collisions, and much like they're going to have to do in football, the whistles and the pads popping, that would become a very premium element of what people are going to want to see and want to watch. And it would be empty, too, because you're not going to have bands. You're not going to have the original generated enthusiasm and passion of college football if you play without fans. And I think that's why, Darren, you just mentioned Gene Smith. I think that's why Gene Smith and Jack Swarbrick and a lot of those people have said it'd be hard for us to play without fans.
It's funny, Wes, a story comes to mind. In Medicine Hat, Alberta, we didn't have a radio guy, but some of the other teams did. So in our park, if there was an afternoon businessman special, as they called it, and very few people in the stands, there was a guy that I could hear clear as day when I was in the batter's box calling the game. And they would say, I couldn't help but hear what he was saying. Donick hitting about he would say whatever my batting average was, and it wasn't good, 176 or 195.
Because that's mostly where it was, right?
That's right, for at least most of the season, that's for sure. But, that was funny. I could hear him. And then, before the Hawkins Field that we know today existed, Wes, you remember this when you were there. We did the games on the third base dugout, on top of the dugout. Yeah. There's no question the pitcher or the third baseman could hear what we were saying. During those games. So that is something to think about. I hadn't thought about that in that respect.
Darren, don't ever forget that the top of the third base dugout at the old Vanderbilt Baseball Stadium was the premium sponsorship opportunity for dental and maxillofacial surgery. It never occurred, by the way.
Yeah, we didn't have the netting protecting us.
No,
there's no question.
No, you wore a hard hat and combat gear to sit up there.
And if it rained, it was over. There was nothing over you. The score sheet, all of those things going out the window, for sure.
Yeah.
But, Wes, here's another thing to think about, too, as an announcer. And you were nice enough to evaluate, a broadcast that I did of my brother's high school basketball game back in the day just so I could get something to you to hear what I sounded like doing play-by-play. This was way, way back. But
right.
It does dawn on anybody putting together a demo tape, right, that any announcer sounds a lot better if there's fans in the stands.
Oh.
Right, so
no question.
I mean, it's going to really separate the best announcers if and when we get into this situation.
Well, let's be honest. I mean, Willie, you guys potentially are one of the first three things to go back. Okay, I mean, let's be honest. The NBA and the NHL and the PGA Tour, in my opinion, are the three most logical and easily to manage sports that could resume first. Once we get some sort of all clear in this world, don't you think? I mean,
we have said that all week. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
They can play the PGA Tour without galleries. That's not hard.
Like to me, the PGA, Wes, the PGA and NASCAR, if there was ever, I keep asking who's going to be the first to come back, and I keep saying, why isn't the answer PGA in NASCAR. They should be the first ones back, you would think.
Well, I think the PGA for sure, Darren. I think NASCAR, I mean, you know, even when they canceled races, they still had folks in RVs show up and park in the parking lot. I think that NASCAR certainly would fall into that category too, but I think the PGA, the NBA, and the NHL are the easiest because, and I'm going to be honest, there's smaller inventory of teams in terms of travel. Like, I mean, Willie, what do you guys take when the Predators go on the road? Do y'all have a group of what? I'm going to say somewhere between 50 and 60?
That sounds about right. So let's say 20, okay. 23 players, let's say 6 or 7 coaching staff. So that's 30. Yeah, I'd say between, you know, around 40 to 50, depending on if there's a few sponsors that tag along or front office people that do it. Yeah, that's
okay.
About right.
All right, so let me just fast forward. You talk to anybody with the Titans, I'm sure they're like the Falcons. That's 200 people if it's 5 that are going on an NFL road trip. The NBA is in that same ballpark that the NHL is. To me, those are just the easiest team sports to reset and restart. Now, whether you're playing them in a casino ballroom or a cruise ship or, you know, you want to play them in Paducah, Kentucky or Dubuque, Iowa, I don't care. But that seems to be the easiest way to start back if you're going to try and do something like this. And, you know, somebody's got to be the first in the pool. And I don't know Gary Bettman, and I don't follow Gary Bettman as much as I follow Adam Silver just from an interest standpoint. But Adam Silver seems like the guy who's willing to take it and say, okay, we'll be the first back in, but we're going to do it the right way and hopefully set the tone for everybody else. And, you know, let's be honest, guys, the NFL is going to be full speed ahead until somebody stops them. And they're going to stop themselves, but they will take it all the way up to the crest before they do. I think we all understand that.
We're talking to Wes Durham, voice of the Falcons, also does some work with the ACC. So shifting gears a little bit, Wes, I got some football questions for you. The Titans have made some free agent acquisitions of former Falcons, and I want to start with Vic Beasley. You know, it's a one-year deal. He's somebody that had a tremendous 2016 and then fell off since then. What are the Titans getting in Vic Beasley?
Well, he's a great kid, number one, on and off the field. He is. I live in Cartersville, Chase, and he's from about 15 miles away, 16 miles away, a community called Adairsville, Georgia. He is a self-made kid, very close to his family, and I think off the field the Titans are getting a tremendous asset in the community. On the field, like a lot of guys who it doesn't end well with their first team, he had that breakout season you mentioned in 16, but there have only been glimmers in the last couple of years, and my guess is that Vic will be pretty keyed up to come there and have an impact on the Titans and be better the second go-around. No matter what position or what the circumstances are, I always think guys who don't have it in well in one spot try to make amends on their next stop, and I'm hopeful that that's what will happen with Vic in Nashville. You know, he had a strong second half to the year here a season ago, almost reached double figures in sacks after a really, really sluggish start. Dan Quinn took a personal investment on Beasley, and Vic didn't show up for off-season stuff, didn't show up for some of the other things, allegedly worked out with Bud Dupree, who played at Kentucky, was in Pittsburgh for a while. But I think the Titans will benefit from maybe a sour ending here in Atlanta from Vic, and I hope so because I like him a lot. He's a good guy, and I'm hopeful for him as a player and as a person for sure.
Do you like the idea of him being able to work side-by-side with Mike Vrabel, who, of course, played the position, knows linebackers?
Yeah, because he plays two different positions depending on, you know, the thing about the NFL. I was having this discussion, I'm talking about the Falcons' potential draft the other day, is, you know, so many people now are playing almost like a base nickel look. And Vic can, you know, put a hand on the ground. He can also, you know, get in space a little bit. And I think that's an asset that will certainly be amplified by working with Vrabel, because there's no question Mike was one of the best multiplicity guys in terms of position play ever in the league. And I think it accounted for a great bit of success in his career too.
Then they also signed a couple of depth players, Ty Sombrio and Jack Crawford. What can you tell us about them?
Well, Jack Crawford is a guy who I think was really effective in his couple seasons here. He got hurt one year, didn't get to play a bulk of the season, but the years he was healthy, he was very, very serviceable. Sombrio, to me, is a guy who it's just a guy. Ty is a good player, but he's not a player that's going to go win a job. Is he a backup? Yes. You don't want him starting double-figure games, though. To give you an example, in 16, when Beasley had the breakout season, he had three sacks in Denver, and all of them were over the top of Sambrello. But he is a guy who I certainly think is a depth guy, but he's not a guy that you're going to count on to start for sure, in my opinion.
Before we let you go, you know, during all this downtime, I've watched a lot of 30 for 30s, including mm-hmm. the one on Michael Vick, and I
sure.
thought the two-part series was very well done. I thought, he really let you in and talked about, you know, everything that he went through, both good and bad. You were around for his time there in Atlanta or some of it. What do you think that he is destined for Canton, or do you think that some of the off-the-field Ooh. Stuff might hold him back, or, you know, were the stats just not where they need to be?
It's a really good question. I haven't thought about that, but it's interesting you bring that up. Look, I think when he locked in, he was too old. Had he locked in to be a pro football player when he first came out of Virginia Tech, I think he would have been a dynamic player in this league and may have changed. And I'll use Lamar Jackson because that's the latest addition, right, of somebody of Michael's talent. I think he would have been, you know, and he was at a high end when he played. But I remember being told when I started doing the ball games in 2004, Chase, that he was the first guy in and the last guy in and the first guy out every day. And wow. that documentary did a really good job of depicting that attitude. And Michael by himself admitting that he was very immature about it. I think he potentially could be a Hall of Fame guy, but it would be a ways away now. I mean, I can't begin to tell you how much talent I think is involved in that selection process. I mean, I think the guy quarterback in Atlanta now is going to go to the Hall of Fame before Michael Vick does.
Mm.
I think Matt Ryan not only has had an MVP campaign, but you start looking at some of the numbers he's had in the last 10 years alone, he's one of the five or six best quarterbacks in this league. And I think we're very fortunate in the NFL to be a part of it now at a time when quarterback play is as high a level as it is. And but it's an interesting question about Michael. I'll be interested to see how the court of public opinion discusses that down the road. But in my mind, that's the first time I've thought about that, but that's a really interesting question. I'll be very curious to see how that gets talked about.
Last thing, when is the NFC South going to get in the headlines? I mean, they really haven't done anything in the offseason. It's been a very quiet division.
Quarterback play is really going to be bad in this division, isn't it?
Very quiet division.
Quarterback play is going to be lousy, yeah.
How weird. I mean, just think about Gurley landing with you guys, Brady with the Bucs, you know, everybody you've been calling, you know, the two times a year against the Carolina Panthers, like every guy you've been talking about, Cam and Olsen and all Keekly, all those guys are gone, so they're starting over.
By the way, Darren, there's talk they may trade Christian McCaffrey.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm telling you, I don't know what's going on in Charlotte. Ever since I got an apartment up there, did the daily ACC Network show, that town's kind of gone off the edge, don't you think? I mean,
what? Why would they trade away him?
I have no idea. I mean, they're in like a. You go back and look at this. I don't know if you guys have caught this, and maybe not because the AFC South just different division, but every player seemingly Matt Rhule has added has a Temple or a Baylor tie.
Oh my. Oh,
I mean, it's interesting to look at. Now, look, I think Christian McCaffrey's great, okay? And I like, you know, Ian Thomas, the tight end, and, you know, I thought they had some decent weapons with DJ Moore and guys like that. But the quarterback play in the division, even with Teddy Bridgewater, and look, let's be honest, Newton wasn't healthy the last 2 years, right? I mean, we can all agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that it's going to be really interesting to see what Carolina does. Are they on a complete fire sale here, or are they going to – you know, build around McCaffrey. I would build around McCaffrey, but then again, we're talking about building around a running back, right? And right now, that's not kind of where the axis of the league falls. I mean, I don't know how you guys feel about it in Nashville with the – I mean, you guys have got one of the great closers in the NFL right now in Derrick Henry, but how does all that set up when you say you're going to build around a running back when that, at least for the time being, seems to be one of the more vulnerable positions. Think about all the money the Rams lost on Gurley, the Falcons lost on Freeman, and all the running back money that's just kind of laying dead out there right now in this league. It's an interesting It's an interesting dynamic when you think about it.
Oh, believe me, we've talked. We've run down that list that you were going down, the David Johnsons and Le'Veon Bell, and you can add all those guys on there too. I mean, yeah, because of the Derrick Henry situation here, right?
Yeah, I mean, Derrick Henry's a great player. I mean, but is everybody comfortable in the NFL building around a running back right now? And I would say no. I would say that this is more of a throw-and-go league, right? I mean, I heard an interesting discussion this morning. I mean, you look at a kid coming out of Ohio State like a Chase Young or Jeff Okuda, who's a great shutdown corner. Which of those is more valuable right now, Chase Young or Jeff Okuda? I mean, that's a really interesting question to ask yourself if you're in one of those front office spots. I mean, because, you know, pass rush is one thing, but stopping the ball in the air is another. It's a really interesting time for the NFL in just terms of pure premium dynamic at position play, I think.
No doubt about it. Hey, really appreciate it. You and the family, be safe, and we'll
Thanks.
Talk to you down the road.
I look forward to coming back and hearing more about Willie hitting 135 in Medicine Hat, don't y'all?
Yeah. The best
it got
is
better. It got better by the end of the season.
It did
got
it
better.
Get in your head?
It did. No, it didn't. Just don't tell anybody that. It got better by the end. Just be honest.
It did get better, Wes, because as we've been sitting here telling stories for the last 4 weeks, he has told the story probably three times already of him picking up the phone and calling George and saying, hey, is that spot still open? Can you still use a radio guy? I think I'm done here.
Phone answerer. I'll take anything.
Chase, when Willie started out, he wanted to say I was hitting two, but he knew that I would call BS on it right away.
I believe
I was hitting like 206, but he knew damn well he never hit two. He only hit one, so it was easier to say one.
Okay, you can check the stats. I did not compete for any triple crown of any side, but I did end up over the Mendoza line. I was over the Mendoza line. I will give myself that.
What a way to end.
Oh, be well, guys. Always fun. Thank you.
Right, thank you, Wes. We'll see you. Wes Durham, he is always so much fun to talk to. The longtime voice of the Atlanta Falcons, ACC Game of the Week. He does it all.
I love the internet. I love the internet so much. In 177 plate appearances.
Save it. Okay. On the other side. Save it. We'll come back more here in this first hour of Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Whether it's slots or live dealers, SpinQuest.com has the fun and action you're looking for. With SpinQuest exclusives, blackjack, roulette, baccarat, and even live dice with craps and bubble craps. The games never stop, so you don't have to. And right now, new users get $30 coin packs for just $10. Play now at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.